All right, so I've got another morning roast edition. For those of you that aren't familiar with the format, this is where I kind of freely discuss some of the issues that are currently going on during the week as I make my commute. It's unedited, it's unfiltered, and you may even hear a little bit of road noise here and there along the way. What can I say? Okay, this week, first of all, we're getting ready to go into the Christmas week, and I know that that usually slows down the works for podcasts and events of that nature. I can't necessarily say that's going to be the case for me, and part of the reason for that is because I am actually freeing up time at this point rather than becoming more congested, and so it will be vitally important for me to try to do some catch-up work on issues that I have not been able to cover in the last month or so. And so I'll be doing a lot of that over the next couple of weeks. So hopefully you can be looking forward to that. I am also in the process of partnering with a few other folks on topics that are very serious, very near and dear to our hearts. Only one of those being the human trafficking issue that is going on. And so that is something that we will be extending into others that you're going to be familiar with probably already on Instagram, on Twitter, etc. And we're going to be discussing these issues, going through the latest news on that, as well as what we can actually do and what is happening to fight all of this. So that's the first little chunk. Now, getting back to the issues that have happened just in the last few days. Okay, let's look at taking them kind of one at a time. Let's look at Michael Flynn. Now, there are all kinds of camps positioning as far as Michael Flynn is concerned. There are those that are going, "What in the world happened yesterday? Why would this whole court thing turn out the way that it did?" Okay, what is Flynn doing? He's demanding that he be found guilty. The judge is coming back. Interesting enough, what media is doing is attacking the judge. They're attacking the judge for the way that he presented himself yesterday. Okay? Now, it was strange. The more information that comes out from that event yesterday morning was that the judge came in barking out pretty serious, pretty stern allegations at Flynn. Flynn was holding on to his guilty plea. The judge seemed to be ticked off at that and starts going off on him. Says that his actions are potentially treasonous, that he has betrayed his country, that he was a foreign agent for Turkey, and he's just going crazy on all this stuff, which these things are unfounded. Then he turns around and he kind of apologizes for the sternness of his language and his statements, pulls back from that, and then seems in a way to kind of beg both sides to rethink the issue before he does a sentencing. Now, again, the media is covering this in such a way that they're saying, this judge is crazy. Here's my take on it. This was my initial gut reaction to the events yesterday. I think what was happening is the judge was very much aware of what he was doing. I think the judge intentionally pushed the envelope with regards to the issue of treason. He threw that statement out there, knowing he would take it back, to get the media talking about treason. What is treasonous? What is not treasonous? Okay? Because that's exactly what's happening. People are going, well, these aren't treasonous acts. These are things that are, and they're starting to define treason. Okay? Now, treason takes you into military court, which we've talked about before, which takes you into tribunals, which can have an end result of execution. It's not a public court. It's a military court, and so forth. Again, the judge brings up and uses the word treason, causes the media to have to discuss what is treasonous and what is not, and get everybody talking about that type of a court appearance, that type of trial, that type of punishment, and so forth. Now, he pulls back from that, and then he is wanting both sides to seriously consider what they're really looking at. And he even had the prosecution coming out and saying, no, this isn't that serious. Okay? So he even had the prosecution saying, well, this isn't that serious of an event. This is a play. He has pushed it back into March. March 13th, I believe, is the date. Which puts us firmly into the new statutes on tribunals, on court-martialing, on treason, etc. Right? We know this because in January, the rules change. Guidelines change. Thanks to the executive order from President Trump. Okay. So he has pushed this effectively into a new system. Now, you could say, well, but this is pre-existing. Okay, let me explain how that doesn't seem to matter. And I'll use Judge, now Justice, Kavanaugh as a perfect example. A charge against Kavanaugh was just dropped. It was either yesterday or the day before. Because the law that covers Supreme Court justice is different than the law that covers a judge. Okay? And despite how people feel about it, as soon as Kavanaugh was accepted as a Supreme Court justice, the rulings changed on him. The laws, the requirements changed on him. And as a result of that, what he was currently being kind of, the allegation that was up against him now no longer applies because he is now no longer breaking the law. And I'm using my own terms here, but he is no longer being affected by the same system. And we can argue all day long, well, but he wasn't that when the allegation was. You're right. But his status has changed now, and so therefore it changes how it affects him. Okay? That was intentionally brought out to the public. Was anybody talking about Kavanaugh? No. Did anyone need to talk about Kavanaugh? No. Yet he was brought up this week about that particular issue. Again, brings to the forefront this idea that once your status changes, the law can change with you. Okay? That can also imply when it comes to all of these cases that are already in indictment or pre-indictment stages. They may have existed in 2018, but 2019 produces a different outcome. These are my own theories. Okay? So, if I'm completely wrong, I'm completely wrong. But this is where my gut is taking me. So we're going to face a new system in just over 2 weeks. It's going to affect all of these things differently in 2 weeks. Now, that's Michael Flynn. We've been told by Q that Flynn is safe. Okay? Now, safe can mean so many different things. It doesn't mean necessarily that he's vindicated. It just means he's safe. Okay? I don't think Flynn did anything wrong. The FBI didn't think Flynn did anything wrong. And I don't think Flynn thinks he did anything wrong. But we already know that Mueller's playbook in the past, going way back, long before the Russia collusion, Mueller's playbook has been to flood an individual with unprovable allegations force them into court proceedings that literally leave them bankrupt in an attempt to defend them. And then once they're at that crippling point, pull back all but one of the allegations from him and say, if you plead guilty to this one, all of this will go away. It's worked for Mueller in the past. He's used it within the last 2 years. And I think he's used it on Flynn. And so Flynn has pled guilty to a lower charge, a lower offense, in order to make all of this madness go away. The judge isn't buying it. And the judge isn't going to let him be sentenced for something that he's not really guilty of. So watch how this turns out. I think Flynn will be safe. Now, is he bankrupt pretty much? Unfortunately, I would say that he is. Does that mean that he cannot recover? Oh, not at all. Look at the GoFundMes and the different things that have happened. I do believe we will take care of our patriots. The Flynn family will be fine. Has he gone through quite a bit? Absolutely they have. Was it justified? No. But we will take care of our patriots. Okay, now, moving from that into the events that took place a little over a week ago that really nobody is talking about. It's amazing how quickly it disappeared. Now, I'm still pushing it on social media. I'm going to push it on here. You need to be pushing it as well. You need to be putting it back into the forefront. The whole case study on the Clinton Foundation. Okay? The day that that case study took place in front of the Oversight Committee, there were literally hundreds of false bomb threats all across the nation during that entire event, during the entire day. Anything to distract the American people from watching their televisions, tuning into C-SPAN, tuning into YouTube to watch it on Judicial Watch or anything of that nature. They wanted to do everything they could to distract everybody from watching that event. Why? Well, the first half doesn't do a whole lot. It was blathering that went on both sides of the committee. Tom Fitton did a good job laying out the items. The IRS guy got brought in by the Democrats last minute, and he came off arrogant and foolish, and it served nothing. It was the second half of the case study that was essential. And I think it needs to be the homework for everybody. Look up the House Oversight second half of that case study, because the two gentlemen, Doyle and Moynihan, run a firm where their actual job is to look into the filings, the tax exemptions, things of that nature, the paperwork of foundations. Now, usually it's the foundation themselves that are asking them, that are paying them, to look into their items and see where there are holes and see where things can be fixed. 3 years ago, this firm looked into the Clinton Foundation because of the things they were hearing about the Clinton Foundation. They did it on their own. They spent their own money looking into all of this. They took the information that was straight from the Clinton Foundation and based their research initially off of all of that. Then they expanded out from that. Just in what was filed by the Clinton Foundation itself, they were able to determine that, going way back to, I believe it was 2002, And earlier than that, really, the Glendale Foundation, just like most of these foundations that are formed right after a president leaves office, are usually intended to build the presidential libraries of that outgoing president. It's been used in the past. That's typically what's happening. The Clinton Foundation sought a tax exemption, a 501c3, that was intending to cover just the creation of the Clinton Library. That's all it was good for. Now, this was confirmed through this case study, that their tax exemption was purely for that purpose. Where the Clintons messed up was they began doing international activities as a part of their foundation. And they began negotiating aid. Although it sounds great, they began negotiating aid between one country and another. Okay, they would see a need in Haiti, wherever. They would get another country to help provide medicine to people in Haiti, or so forth. The moment they began to use the foundation as a means of interacting between one nation and another, they stepped beyond what their tax exemption allowed them to do. Tax exemption was only for accepting donations tax-free for the building of the presidential library. Their donations could not be used tax-free for events between one country and another, because that makes them what is called a foreign agent. And that's something that others are being busted for right now. It's interesting this is being brought up. Other people are being accused of, which is what Flynn was being accused of being a foreign agent for Turkey or in Turkey. Okay? Again, these things are being brought up for a reason, so that we will become acclimated to the terms, the meanings, therefore. I think this still all goes back to what I'm talking about now with the Clinton Foundation. The Clinton Foundation became a foreign agent as soon as it began to produce under the name of the Clinton Foundation, or subsidiaries of the Clinton Foundation, began to be an agent between one country and another for any purposes. Since their tax exemption was not sought for that purpose, they would have to change their status on their tax exemption to fit that. They never did. Never did. Now, this firm was able to indicate that even if everything they did was truly charitable, which we know wasn't, but even if everything was charitable, they were doing it without having sought a change of their tax exemption to fit what they were doing. Therefore, they did not have a legitimate tax exemption for what they did. Now, this affects not only their own tax exemption, but it affects the tax exemption of the donors. If you donated to the Clinton Foundation and got a tax write-off for it, it is possible that that is no longer going to be seen, or should never have been seen, as legitimate, and you may actually owe back taxes on funds donated to the Clinton Foundation because they did not have the proper tax exemption. They have accepted in between $400 million and $2.5 billion. That may now be taxable. And that's ugly enough as it is. That's major tax fraud, because they've gone all these years without changing that status. Countless violations of their tax exemption. Now, if that was all it was, it would still be majorly serious, financially crippling. But the firm also was able to determine that, unlike the average foundation, where about up to about 15% of their donations can be legitimately and ethically used for administrative costs, which includes salaries, the Clinton Foundation was more like 60%, close to 60%, on administrative costs. Meaning that nearly 60 cents on every dollar donated to the Clinton Foundation was going into the pockets of employees of that foundation in some fashion. Or put it another way, less than 50% of the money of every dollar was actually going to what you were donating for. Now, what's also interesting about that is that they were able to indicate that only 0.1% of their donors donated 80% of their donations. That pretty much means like one person, folks. One person or one company donated 80% of the donations. And remember, we're talking between $400 million and $2.5 billion donated to the Clinton Foundation. And 80% of that came through one person or one entity. So just let that settle for a while. Now, so they were misusing the amount of money being used for administrative costs. This independent firm was also able to determine, through people they interviewed and documentation that they acquired, and I quote them, they were using it like a personal piggy bank. Using it for travel, personal expenses, things of that nature. So a vast majority of the money that wasn't being used on administrative fees, apparently, was being used on travel and personal expenses. And they named specifically Bill Clinton as a major one who would break into the funds for personal use. So there's all kinds of IRS issues there. Just on that end. Now, the firm was also able to determine that they have other charges that they are involved in with the Clinton Foundation. This was one of the things that frustrated the committee. And I say frustrated. I think Mark Meadows was frustrated, but I don't think he was frustrated for the reasons that it looked like he was frustrated. I think he was very much aware of where the questioning was going, and he just wanted to make sure that it was televised. Okay? There was outrage from the Republican side, not really from the Democrat side, who had a tendency to disappear during that meeting. But there was outrage from the Republican side because of these issues. But one of them was that they were requesting that the rest of the 6,000 documents that this firm has be submitted to them, to which the firm said that they could not do it because there were ongoing investigations still going on that these documents were affecting. And this is their livelihood. Now, these ongoing investigations were outside the realm of the tax exemption. There were criminal cases that are ongoing against the Clinton Foundation that they have documents on. These documents have been submitted to the FBI, to the DOJ. All of this came out in that hearing. So they are being investigated. There are current things going on there. And it helped clarify for Mark Meadows, although I think he already knew, it helped clarify for Mark Meadows and for the committee why John Hubbard was not there, because he was originally petitioned to be there. He wasn't there because he could not make testimony on the materials they were discussing that day, because it's still ongoing. It overlaps with active investigations that he's involved in. Now, he was also still in Utah that day overseeing a sexual abuse case. He was testifying in a sexual abuse situation in Utah. So he had other human abuse issues that he was dealing with that day, and that's really technically why he was not physically there at that oversight hearing. But he also would not have been there without the other case, because he has ongoing investigations that the documentation that this firm has affects. All of this was intentionally being brought out by Mark Meadows on live television, so that the American people who were paying attention or will go back and watch it will realize there are active investigations going on with the Clinton Foundation and with other foundations that are affected by the same thing. Okay, this was a case study, meaning they're using the Clinton Foundation as their example in regards to other foundations that may have violated similar guidelines. Now, this affects other foundations. Think about the other foundations that have come up in the news. You could go online and look up foundations with familiar names attached to them, and you'll find most of them deal with similar issues that the Clinton Foundation deals with. Now, as much as you don't want to believe it, many of these foundations that you may have donated to, that you want to prayerfully believe in, are shell companies. They're doing corrupt deeds. They're laundering their funds through this system. And we already know that, Mossack Fonseca is being looked at, because it's a firm that is designed, it's a company that is designed to create shell accounts, shell companies, scam accounts, offshore accounts, those kind of things, in order to hide your money, to shelter your money from taxes and so forth. And it's done for, and they do it usually with, hey, we'll create a foundation or two, and you can funnel your money through those foundations. Okay? So a lot of these foundations are nothing more than shell companies to cover the money laundering, or to be treated as tax shelters for corrupt dealings. The John McCain Foundation, the Clinton Foundation, so forth. Now, the Trump Foundation just shut down this week. Now, is that because they were doing something corrupt? Don't know. Could be. I mean, it could be. Do I believe that's the case? Not really. No, I really don't. But I think they chose to shut down rather than be called out and centered on. But again, all of this brings up to the forefront of people's minds, to the media, foundations, tax exemptions, proper records, shell companies, money laundering, etc. all of this is done for a reason, folks. And for those of you that are still sitting out there going, there's nothing going on, nothing's happening. I saw another account, rather large account. Well, I say a large account, not large account, popular account on Instagram. It just sent out a simple message last night. I'm going away until I start seeing people being arrested. You know, until I start seeing trials happen or people being arrested and things of that nature, then I'm going away. And all I have to say to people that are sitting at that position, you didn't believe in any of this in the first place. You've allowed your personal frustration and your impatience to get in the way of the big plan, the big picture. So I will wrap up my session, my morning roast, with this. We did not get into the corruption that we are in this nation and in this world, overnight. We didn't become evil instantaneously. It has taken decades, in some cases centuries, to build the evil machines that are in place around the world. And because of that, and it's become the very likely, the lifestyle, it's become the very financial basis of major companies and in some cases countries. It's deeply, deeply, deeply rooted in society. And so busting it up, exposing it, and killing off the organism is not going to happen in a few weeks or months. It's not going to happen in a couple of years. Sorry, folks. You're not going to dismantle 100-year organization of corruption in 18 months. You can hobble it. You can cripple it. But you're not going to destroy it that quickly. It's deep. There are generations that don't even know how to function in any way other than the way that they function with this. It's been passed on. It's like it's genetically moved forward, generation by generation. So it's not going to dismantle quickly. It's not going to go away without a fight, without a serious fight. So any movement at all, any movement at all is progress. Have we seen big names arrested? No. But there have been thousands of people that aren't big name, but are the doers of the big names that have gone down. When you've got all the people that are actually doing the physical activities for these big names being arrested, being stopped, you're making progress. And what I said a moment ago is not true. We haven't had any big names. We have had big names that have gone down. John McCain is gone. He's dead. He's toast. He's pushing up the daisies somewhere, or he's watering something somewhere. John McCain was bad. He was corrupt. He was a black hat. He's gone. That's the largest name on the list so far. And I, for one, the day that I heard that he was gone, was thankful. And I saw a light at the end of the tunnel with his death. Then you realize that just a couple of months later, a few months later, we're turning around and H.W. Bush is gone. I'm hearing of medical reports on people like Lady Gaga and others who suddenly have contracted cancer and things have come back. Progress is being made. Ruth Bader Ginsburg will not be returning to the Supreme Court because her cancer has come back. So forth. The Clintons are being bitten away at by allegations and by documentation at this point. Even James Comey came out. As much as we hate James Comey, even he came out, and if you read the transcripts, you'll see that there's proof to this. Even he came out and said, yes, she inappropriately used emails. Yes, Barack Obama inappropriately used email information. Even he is exposing this stuff out there. The documentation is there. Now, they can argue he wasn't under oath. It doesn't change the fact that he acknowledged it. There is activity. There is movement. There is success going on with all of this. And just because you don't see people in orange suits, just because they haven't set up public guillotines or nooses, doesn't mean there haven't been executions. It is moving. But if you're following anybody on social media or through podcasts that is giving you a message that they're giving up, that they're not seeing anything happen, stop following them. Because they may have started out pure, but they have been compromised. They're shills. They may not have started out that way, but they have become shills. They've lost it. Because it's just not true. There is activity happening. There is success going on. And those that are saying that it's not happening, they've given up on it, you don't need to be following. And it's not because you just don't need to be hearing negative news. No, it's not that. It's not about an attitude. Well, I guess in a way it is. Their attitude of it's not happening is going to taint everything that they present to you. Okay, it's not happening at breakneck speed, but it is happening. I have held to that from the beginning. I still hold to that. And I profit nothing from this. You know this. I haven't asked for a single dime from anybody in regards to this movement that of research that I do and that I partner with others on doing. Not that there's a problem with asking for donations, voluntary donations from people to help improve the research abilities. I don't have a problem with that. But I don't provide materials to people based off of them paying me. That's the key. And don't follow anyone who does. If you have to pay for their information, don't trust their information. But if they are presenting to you an image of nothing is happening, you don't need them. Because they're obviously not looking. They're obviously not seeing. And they're not communicating to you what needs to be communicated. They, in fact, have become a part of the machine that we're fighting against. The machine would love to have you discouraged, doubting, and giving up. It would love to have you abandon ship and to tell others to abandon ship. And the truth is, it's just not real. There's gobs of activity going on. And you're going to hear a lot of it from me and from others connecting with me, partnering with me, over the next couple of weeks. Yes, over the holiday. Because crime doesn't stop. Human trafficking doesn't stop because it's a holiday. Corruption doesn't stop because it's a holiday. In fact, they're more likely to try and push more things through during a holiday season because they assume nobody's going to be paying attention to anything. So we're going to stay vigilant. We're going to stay alert. And I've got powerful, passionate, energetic, and godly people that are partnered with me. I'm making sure that we present to you the best possible truth we can find. So stay vigilant. Don't give up. And don't continue to socialize, at least not rely on information from people who have given up or tell you to give up. We need winners, not losers, in our lives. Okay, this is Ford signing off. God bless you.